Hey, welcome to the Nerdy Rat. This week we're going to be talking about Patrick Stewart and his foster dogs, the bald eagle in DC. My brother asks why rats, and we're going to talk about Skull Island. So enjoy. How you doing, Liz?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing pretty good.
So your brother asked this week, why do you want to keep rats as a pet?
Well, let me... So this question comes from my brother via my mother. Because, thank you, Steve, but he sent me some feedback about the show. And he said this to my mom when my mom was visiting him. He said, I don't want to sound like I'm trolling, but I was wondering, why rats? And I think that's a fair question for somebody who's never kept a rat.
It's definitely a good question.
You know, when I originally had this idea to do the podcast, my kind of target audience, I guess, was other rat owners, people who already owned rats or wanted to get a rat. I wasn't really thinking like I would need to explain, but it's a fair question if you've never had one. So I figure we could talk about it because it is kind of, there's a lot of reasons. Like me personally, I remember when I was a kid. You ever see the movie Abyss?
Yeah, we watched it together.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, movies. Yeah. So I made Liz watch it because it was one of my favorite. It was one of my mom's favorite movies, to be fair. But in the movie, there's a guy who has a pet rat living in this rig, and it would just kind of hang out on his shoulder and stuff.
Right.
And I remember seeing that. I always thought that was like a really cool pet to have, like a pet that would just hang out on your shoulder with you.
Yeah.
While
yeah.
you were, you know, and.
Well, and in the movie too, it's very sweet, and it's like a very nice rat, and it presents a very different image from like, say, your stereotypical idea of a dirty, scary New York City rat.
I've never really felt that way about rats. Like, I think a lot of people, like, I mean, where I grew up, like, we didn't have rats in Lakeland, Florida, where I grew up, but you know, like in DC and New York City, you see them like in the sewers and the parks and stuff.
Right.
Like there's a park I drive home from every day that has a rat. Like I frequently see rats running across the street. I've just never thought they were gross, honestly.
I think it's kind of like what the community around you thinks. Like if everyone around you has a negative stereotype about rats because they're a problem and they're considered a pest and a nuisance in your neighborhood, and, you know, I think that kind of can affect you.
And I think rats you see in the wild are all generally like the really dark brown wild rats. Look a lot different from most pet rats. Most pet rats are a bit cuter, I think.
Now, but, see, I don't really know the difference because I don't even know what outdoor native rats really look like.
Well, I mean,
like
in
much.
This area, they're the large brown roof rats that, like, my mom had in her garden.
Yes.
They generally don't have any kind of typical markings. Mm-hmm. Watching the scene that pet in that movie initially had me interested in it, but I didn't get a rat till I was much older, like in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted a pet, and a lot of people I knew, like in a lot of houses I'd lived in before, there had been cats and stuff, but like I never really connected with any of the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got my first rat, like it was really, really sweet. And aww. I was just kind of fell in love immediately. And I've really been keeping rats for most of the time since then. And I mean, I think for a lot of people keep rats because if you're younger and you're living in an apartment where you're necessarily not allowed to have like a dog or a cat, or they have restrictions on like how big of a dog or cat you can get, or breed restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a rat, a lot of times, like you don't even have to put a pet deposit down at most apartments. I know I didn't. As long as you're keeping them in a cage and they're not like running around the apartment, they're not going to charge. Because generally they charge you like a pet deposit if
if it's
you have a cat or a dog that's gonna
carpet,
yeah, that's gonna mess up the carpet. It's basically a carpet replacement fee,
right? Like, I was never charged for having parakeets in an apartment, and in fact, I lived in apartments that had a no pet policy, and I specifically asked, "Can I have my parakeets?" And they said, "Oh yeah, you can have your parakeets." So yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Now you do have to be careful though, because I want to point out we did end up having to take in Rocky and Fancy from mom who was living in an apartment, and she didn't know that she couldn't have rats. And I don't know if maintenance saw them or a neighbor. I don't know how a neighbor would have found them. I'm guessing maintenance probably saw them. And she had to give them up. And she loved those rats so much. Yeah. And she just was absolutely stuck. You know, I guess she was not in a position to move or get out of her lease.
Some apartments are just real a-holes about it.
Yeah, so you definitely want to check before you buy a rat, because you may have, especially if you're renting, you may have a provision against it, and you don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, also, like, some cities, like, I don't know, it's a Canadian city. I think it's Toronto, mm-hmm. but they're strictly no, you're not allowed to have rats.
Oh, like interesting. Yeah,
I can't remember if it was Toronto or another Canadian city, but they have strong laws against rats, because they fought really hard to get rats out of their city, which
mm-hmm. that makes sense.
I think it's, I mean,
well,
it's kind of like, you know, like you. People wouldn't do that for squirrels.
No, but
I don't really see there's not much of a difference between squirrels and rats, like, other than just public perception, I think.
No, but I mean, you know, you want to be mindful of whatever local ordinances
obey
have.
Whatever rules you have, because
it's much worse to get in a position of having to give your animals up.
But for me, when I was still living in an apartment and I didn't want to pay a pet deposit, a lot of times I could mm-hmm. I could have rats and not have to pay that. And mm-hmm. and the thing is, like, rats are really, like, I've owned a lot of different small animals, like small mm-hmm. furry, you know, like hamsters, gerbils. Mm-hmm. I never had a rabbit or the more expensive ones, but mm-hmm. You know, I think rats are really the more intelligent out of all the small animals. Like, they're definitely way smarter than hamsters and way mm-hmm. smarter than gerbils, because hamsters are just straight dumb. Like, I love my hamsters yeah. to death, but yeah. like, if you put them on your shoulder, they'll just walk right off and fall yeah. onto the
well,
ground.
Well, and I will say, because I've lived with you now, and we've had rats and hamsters at the same time, and the hamster wasn't as interactive. The hamster wasn't as willing to play yeah. with us.
Well, the hamster would
more
let
just
you.
Did his own thing.
The hamster more will let you play with them. The rats yeah. are more interested in actually interacting with you.
Right, right.
And rats are really intelligent. I mean, I've seen people, like, I've never done this, but mm-hmm. people train rats just like you would train a dog, like, to do tricks and, yeah. you know, do whatever you want. I mean, I train my rats to come whenever they hear me shaking around the treat jar.
The treats, yes. Yeah, when they hear the treats, they know what that means.
Whenever I get out the pistachios, they go, oh,
ooh,
well, let me.
Ooh, let's run and to the cage.
I love having them as pets. I love interacting with mm-hmm. them. I love watching their interactions with each other, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, and rats are, like, really a pet that, like, if you, like, I am not a person who necessarily would have time to play with the rats every single day. And if they relied on me for all their interaction, I feel like mm-hmm. they wouldn't be very happy. But that's a good thing about rats, too, is as long as you have more than one, mm-hmm. they can entertain each other, really.
Right.
You know, we're like some people do that with cats, too, where they'll get another cat to interact with their cat. Our cat's not like that.
No, our cat is
our cat only likes
only
to interact
child.
With us.
Yes.
But I mean, all rats are pretty much like that. Like, they're yeah. you give them a big enough cage and they will
right.
do
enough
fine
stimulation.
On their own and be very, very healthy. Right. And
so let me go back too about the why rats, because I really relate to Steve's question with that. Because on our very first date, me and Matt, he told me he had pet rats, and I was like, oh, like, it was not something that really was in my realm of consciousness as far as a pet choice. But I had seen the movie Ratatouille and I loved it. So yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'm willing to kind of give them a chance. And I really love animals, and I just never really interacted. And I just really loved how sweet the rats were. Like, I found that, well, especially Matt's, because he'd handled them so much. They were very tame. They weren't really, like, skittish. Like, I feel like pet mice can be sometimes really skittish. And, like, skittish. I'd... Like, they really had their own little personalities. And they really, you know, they would kind of do their own things in a thoughtful way. Like when Matt was saying they're intelligent, like they really play thoughtfully, and like they each have their own little personality of how they like to play and how they like to interact. And it was, I could relate to that because I have parakeets, and my parakeets were so individual. And sometimes people don't know that when they're not familiar with small animals. So I thought it was really neat how they like to interact and how friendly they were. And they're really clean. I mean, I didn't think, you know, they'd be clean, but they're really clean. And so, you know, they're just sweet, nice little furry cuddly pets.
Yeah, and they don't smell as long as you clean the cage at like once every 2 weeks.
Or once every week.
I mean, once every week.
It kind of depends how many rats you have, but once a week is best.
I would love to have the energy to clean. Like, I usually spot clean every other day or so. Yeah. Like to like get like messes and stuff like that. But like generally, the cage is big enough and there's enough litter in there that even with seven of them, cleaning it every other week.
Yeah.
It like tearing it out and tearing it down and replacing all the litter and doing all that is enough to keep it clean. And they don't smell. No,
the rats themselves don't smell. No, it's just, you know, you need to change their litter when the litter starts to stink.
I know before I knew any better and I would keep them in aquariums, I would have to change it every week just because aquariums are, this is the reason aquariums are so bad. Because
there's no air circulation.
There's no air circulation.
And that's bad for their respiratory stuff too.
And I really, it's like, it's kind of like the thing, like you get one rat or you get a couple rats and then one
dies.
One passes away and then you get another rat to, and then it's just kind of the cycle.
I know.
And you just kind of like, once you start like you,
if you
you've given it a chance, like, I think it, and the only real downside I would say is their short lives.
Their short
and
lifespans. Yeah.
That's hard. A downside for me because I don't like to lose them. Mm-hmm. But for some people that may be, they may prefer that because they don't like, it's less of a, you get a dog, you have a dog for 10 years.
Right.
You have to make considerations and plans and bank money for vet bills for that dog for the life of the dog.
And vacation plans too. Yeah. You need to decide how you going to do it.
So, rats and they pass away and then you can decide if you want to take a break or
keep going.
Owning an animal. I think a lot of people do take breaks from that because being a pet caretaker is a big responsibility and it's financial
and it's emotional, time consuming.
You have to commit your emotions, a lot of work and your time.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sometimes when my friends come over and they have little kids and the little kids are like, oh, I really want a pet. And the mom's like, oh, no. But I will be honest with the kid and I will say to them, well, you know, it's a lot of work to have a pet. Like, do you know your infant sister? Like, you know how your parents have to feed her so often and change her diaper and play with her and she has to take naps and sleep and have a bath. And I'm like, all those things go into taking care of a rat, you know? And her mom's like, thank you for saying that, because it's true. And I think a lot of people, a lot of adults as well as children, don't take into consideration how much work owning a pet is.
Yeah,
you know. But and like when for you, us we I love the rats I
when,
love them
when you have to medicate six foster boys twice a day.
Matt is doing that now.
They're not on it right now.
They're on their off cycle right now. But
only Athena's on medicine right now.
But it's like you have to take into account, right, when they get sick, how are you going to take care of them? And for us, I mean, me and Matt, we don't have kids. We don't want kids, human kids. So for us, I think we've chosen.
Thank you for clarifying the human part.
Because we do have children. They're just furry. But for us, we prefer to have animals, and I think we'll always have animals in our lives because for us, that's what we love, and that's how we love to spend our time.
And we've got two applications in for our fosters now, so at least two of them will be getting adopted next week.
Right, which means we'll only have two left. We'll see. We're not sure yet who's going to get adopted.
Sweet boys.
Because their forever mom is going to, you know, pick which two she wants. But these really are, again, the sweetest little boys. We would love for the last two to go to their forever family.
Yeah,
so boy, make sure you look at our page.
Boy rats are kind of like boy cats. Like when you get when you get them neutered, like they become very, like they have a tendency to become very docile.
Sleepy.
and
I'm just thinking of our cat, like sweet, sleepy,
like,
silly,
like just
Like, I don't know about silly. Our cat's exceptional.
Like some rats, after you get them neutered, and they just turn into loafs that like want to cuddle all the time.
Oh, and that can be so sweet.
Yeah, and yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna convince. If you think rats are gross, don't get them.
Oh, definitely. Like, you never want to get a pet that you think is
gross. I don't
think
I'm
going
to ever convince, but I
no,
mean,
but
that,
I think
that's
it's a fair
the,
question. It's
I,
a fair
I think
question
it is a fair
ask.
Question, and that's just kind of how I got into, you know, mm-hmm. got into keeping rats. And mm-hmm.
And also, I will say, the rats are very interesting. Like, they're playful to watch. Like, it's fun to watch them, to me, like, eating their food and running around their wheels and, like, they'll play and like rip boxes up
and they'll make nests.
Sit in their hammocks and like they do a lot of interesting things.
I try to change out every couple of days. We give them one of the soda can boxes.
Yeah, like you know if you get like a 12 pack of soda cans.
And they will take it and they will build a nest in it and they'll hang out in there and that's always fun to watch them.
Yeah, they'll pull the different litter and things into it and they'll just kind of make it their little hidey hole.
I left my rat hoodie next to the cage.
The rat hoodie we were talking about last episode that I put the patches on from Spider Stitches. Check her out on Etsy. And, you know, yes, the ratties chewed it up a little bit.
Yep. And, well, they didn't get it too bad. They got, like, the like
lower
the bottom
hem.
Part of it. It's still wearable. It's not like it's...
Yeah. Well, but, now yeah, it's definitely been it's marked been, by the rats.
It's been marked by the rats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So let's move on to some animal news here on The Nerdy Rat, featured on thenerdyrat.com. Also, if you haven't checked out our website, feel free, thenerdyrat.com. All the show notes will be there.
Uh-huh.
I may post some of my artwork on there, too. I've been posting some of it on our Facebook page.
And also deviantart.com.
Yeah, and I made a there's a links there. The links to our charities are there.
Mm-hmm. On thenerdyrat.com.
On thenerdyrat.com. You can go to my deviantart page and check out some of the artwork I've done for the show. Which we'll probably be using in upcoming episodes. But other animal news, you want to talk about the bald eagles here in D.C.?
Yeah, so we have a couple nesting pairs of bald eagles here in D.C., which is really exciting news for animal conservationists because bald eagles are endangered or were endangered, and now they're making a comeback in the wild. I thought they all lived out west, so I was surprised that we have local ones here in D.C. But two mated pairs have been nesting the last several weeks, and two of them, there was an article in the Washington Post. We had a snowstorm this past week with several inches of snow. And these birds are sitting on their nest, keeping their eggs warm. And we had the sweetest little picture of the two birds covered with snow staying on top of their eggs to keep the eggs warm. And it was so sweet. Like the mom was on top of them. And then the dad was like half shielding the mom on top of her.
Yeah,
covered with snow.
We'll put a link to the Washington Post article in the show notes.
It was really cute. And then there's a video. One of the eggs hatched a little bit later in the week. So there's a little video of that
there's
too.
There's two of them. Did you see this?
I didn't see the second one yet hatch. I saw the first one hatched, but probably the second one is hatched as well. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they've got a picture on the Washington Post article of the two little babies.
Oh, so they both hatched. Awesome. Yeah. And there's two different nests, I think. So that's probably two from the one nest. And I'm not sure if they have a camera on the second nest, but they have like a live cam on one of the nests. So.
Right.
Yeah. So that's our little local animal news. Very sweet.
Yeah,
love to see it. Oh, and I was gonna say too that because I'm a parakeet person, it reminded me a lot of my bird Mrs. Kermit, who I thought was male, so her name was Kermit because she was green. It turned out she wasn't because she started laying eggs. So named her Mrs. Kermit. And they were unfertilized eggs because she lived in a separate cage from my other bird because they didn't get along. But she was such a little sweetie pie when she started laying her eggs because I had never seen a bird nest before. And she like ripped up all the paper towels in the bottom of her cage and she like fluffed them all up in the corner under her seed dish so she could sit under there. And she had her little nest. And then when she laid her eggs, she laid one every couple days until she had six. And she just, it was so cool to see how she fluffed herself out and just stayed over those eggs and kept them warm and just loved them and nurtured them. It broke my heart that they weren't going to hatch because she was expecting him to hatch, and that was kind of hard when I finally had to take him away from her.
No.
But I gave her lots of time to be a mommy. But it just warms my heart to see, like, good mothers in the animal kingdom. Like, with Bao Bao, the panda who we were talking about last show, like, the way Mei Zhang, her mom, took such good care of her, and, like, the eagles and the parakeets. Like, it's just amazing to me to see how much love pet parents have for their children.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
want to talk some about the rats like that, baby? Because we've had several rats who've had kids, like Nim and, like, the foster.
Well, yeah, the Nim, one of my personal rats that I have now, we adopted her. She was the mom of four of our other rats that we have.
Mm-hmm. We adopted her with her four babies.
Yeah, when we
took her in, she had six girls, and they had separated the boys out because they had reached sexual maturity.
Yeah, and
so she had a huge litter. What did she have, 12? I think she had 12 in
her
litter.
She did have 12 because she had a bunch of boys, too.
Six boys and six girls. Yeah.
She was really sweet. I hadn't planned on adopting her. I was just going to get the babies, but then she was such a sweetheart. I just had to keep her.
I know.
And she's our alpha now. She's really good.
She's a gentle alpha. Like, she definitely is the leader of the cage, but she just loves to, like, lick everybody. She's not aggressive. She doesn't wrestle everybody a lot and force them into grooming a lot. Because nobody really challenges her dominance out of all the rats we have now.
Yeah.
The only other dominant one I'd say we have is her daughter, Pinky. But Pinky definitely submits to her mama. She knows her mama's the leader of the pack.
I think everybody kind of just recognizes that's mom. And
the other rats, too. None of the other ones are really alpha inclined except for Pinky. Yeah. So, yeah.
And, you know, when I was a kid, we had Saren, we had a bird that would lay eggs.
Aww.
And she would always, she was real sweet, but then, like, once she started laying eggs, she just kind of was interested in guarding her eggs all the time.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, now but, Mrs. Kermit she would love to sit on her eggs, but she was my little baby girl. And, she knew I was taking care of her. Like, I would put her seed in, so she wouldn't have to jump up to the seed dish and get off her eggs. I would put her seed in, like, a little Tupperware lid, and I would, like, scooch it over next to her. And she'd be like, oh, thank you, mommy. You take care of me. It was like, I felt like my teenage daughter had given birth. That's how concerned and worried over her I felt the first time she laid her eggs. I was like, oh, my God, I'm a grandmother, and this is my baby's giving birth to me. But now it happened, though. It kept happening. Like, every couple months, she'd lay another clutch. And eventually she realized that they weren't going to ever hatch. And I think she kind of got a little over it at that point, even though she kept laying. It was like, you know, it lost its glow. But she was so sweet. But no, she didn't attack me or anything when she had her eggs because she loved me. I was her mommy.
Yeah. All right. And in other celebrity animal news, Patrick Stewart has become a foster parent for a pit bull named Ginger.
Yes. And oh my goodness, if you have not seen the videos of them this week on the internet, you need to check them out.
He's been posting pictures to his Instagram, I believe.
Okay.
And I'll have a link to an article in the show notes and also a link to a video. He was on Conan. And he talked about it. He's like, this is the first dog I had in like 50 years.
Yeah, since he was a little kid. This is the first dog he's had since he was a little kid.
Yeah, he didn't adopt it. He is a foster parent for this rescue.
Him and his wife. Yeah, they're fostering.
And I just think that's awesome because he's bringing awareness to fostering too.
Although I was sad because I saw that the dog adores him and he adores the dog, and I'm kind of like, oh, but I wonder if it's gonna be too hard on this dog to leave you. Like, that's the only thing that kind of hurts a little bit.
He's in a loving home until he can find a permanent home.
I know,
I think a lot of people foster, and you know, for him it may be that he doesn't have the ability to commit, because if he's gonna take jobs or something, he may be away for extended periods of time. You know, so I mean, there's a lot of good, I think it's just awesome that he's fostering. So adorable with that dog, too.
It was
like asleep on the couch, and it was like,
he gives you a little kiss.
He's like, yes, we shall punish it for being on the couch with a kiss. And then he's so cute.
It was very cute.
He's just the most adorable man on the planet.
I know. And the dog is
adorable, too. Yes. It really annoys me that people have such a bad like opinion of pit bulls and German shepherds and certain breeds. There's no difference between a pit bull and a lab.
No, like,
they are the same dog. If you treat them the same way, you will get the exact same type of personalities out of both of them.
Exactly. Like we have a Rottweiler who lives across the street. That is the friendliest, happiest dog. My God. She's adorable. Just loves everyone. Like she's
really sweet.
She is just like the biggest ball of fluff, sweet ball you ever could imagine.
What's happened in this area too is a lot of places have outlawed like pit bulls, and what happened was all the shelters filled up with nothing but pit bulls everybody got them and then had to get rid of them.
When I was back living in apartments, I remember it either became a county decree or even a state decree. I'm not sure if it was county or statewide. So all these people in apartments who already had pit bulls were now being told by their apartment communities
that they couldn't
they couldn't keep their dogs, and they're trapped in a lease. They love their dogs. It's like, what are you going to do? It was awful.
What can you do?
I think that's an awful situation. I just think, again, you know what? Be more assertive with watching out for fighting rings and vicious animals.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the dog's. No. Like, fighting rings are not the dog's fault. It's people.
It's
like,
people.
You're punishing the dogs
for people.
Yeah.
And just have animal control be more diligent or, you know, whatever, but I don't think the solution
I had a friend a few years ago who had a pit bull that came from a pit bull rescue in Virginia, and she was the sweetest dog, and I've never met a pit bull that was mean. I mean, I haven't met many dogs that were mean. The only dog I can remember off the top of my head that I ever met that was mean was probably a Chihuahua.
Little dogs.
But it wasn't. I don't think it was because he was a Chihuahua. I think it was because he was abused.
And he had
a terrible attitude because his former owner had abused him.
So it's like, you know, dogs are, by the way, like children, they're going to react how you treat them. So, you know, that's why, you know, I want to hop onto that because tangent, but it reminded me as a teacher, too. We always used to say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I would never blame a child for acting out or being any kind of certain way, because the thing is, yes, you want to teach them boundaries and you want to teach them to be better. But they are that way because of the way they are treated by their parents or guardians. And, you know, it's just I don't like when I see people blame kids or blame dogs or blame animals for things, because when you're a young or powerless or vulnerable creature, you're going to react to how you've been treated. So, you know, no matter what it is, it's up to the responsible parent, guardian, owner, whoever it is, to deliver love and affection and be a good, you know, pet parent or human parent.
The truth is any animal can
become
a well-natured
Well, pet. Let's talk for a minute about Tippy Toe, because she was just our rat Tippy Toe. She was just coming up to me in our cage today, licking on me and being so sweet. And she is one of our rats. I think we've talked about her before. She was found outside, and someone knew she was a pet rat because she was white and not brown like the outdoor rats. And Tippy was so skittish and shy when we first got her.
She really was not.
She was scared
of
people.
She was just kind of scared of everything.
Yeah,
really.
She was traumatized.
I think being with our group has helped a lot.
And also just being with us. And because now she is just the sweetest girl. And I think it's so amazing to see how animals can sometimes be rehabilitated like that too.
Yeah, she's, you know, I've had a number of rats that have come around a lot. Like Mama and Tippy Toe. You know, Doreen was pretty skittish.
Shy when we first got her too. She was shy and depressed because she had come from a shelter where her cage mate had died, and she was just so sad. And she just turned into the most loving girl with us and our rats. So yeah, just even if you get a quote emotionally damaged pet or something,
the worst animal can come around with enough patience
and love.
So let's moving on to some nerdy stuff.
That sort of has to do with rat. Animals.
Oh, yes.
Because guess what we saw this weekend?
So we saw Kong Skull Island.
That's right.
We did go. We did rent the original 1933 Kong.
Yes, we did.
And we watched that ahead of time to get ready for the new one.
Which I had seen before, but Matt had never seen before. So, Matt, what were your impressions of it?
I was really impressed. And, you know, I'd never seen it before. I'd always seen like clips of it.
Of course,
and stuff,
yeah, because it's
you
so
know.
Famous.
And I remember in I watched this documentary on the making of Star Wars when I was a kid, and I remember they referenced a lot of the claymation in that film, and I always thought it was like just kind of cheesy, like early. But I mean, like watching it, like that was really probably the original summer blockbuster action, like effects driven action film, because you know, like, yeah, some of the claymation was a little cheesy and some of the animation was a little, but it was done really well. You know, I was really impressed, like the giant
dinosaurs,
the giant head that they created for some of the scenes where he would put them in his mouth and he would like chew on them.
Oh yeah,
and then they would have like the actor, like close up of the actor, right, and the giant, the,
right.
And
so
the
they
giant
actually
hand.
Sculpted that, right? They sculpted,
yeah,
like,
it was like
the
a
head
live,
and the hand.
It was like, yeah, it was like a full size, and I gotta say, like the effects were pretty good, you know, and it was a pretty impressive film.
And when you consider too, this was, like Matt said, probably the first film that used such an extent of special effects like this. Like, I was really impressed that the claymation, all of the characters moved in such sophisticated ways, like their heads, their arms, their tails. Like, they weren't just stiff and wonky movements. Like, they were really moving in a variety of ways.
I really liked in that one, every time King Kong would kill something, he would, like, kind of shake it to make sure it was dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, when he killed, like, I think he killed the... When he killed the dinosaur and he kind of like picked it up to see if it was dead. And then later he fought the snake and he kind of did the same thing.
Like, you dead?
You dead?
You really dead? You faking
it? I was like, those are the details that I like to see in my like, I really want. Like,
now, I will say something that I really appreciated in the old King Kong was how gorgeous the cinematography was, because they really thought of it like as an art. And you could see that shot after shot after shot, like the framing of the shot and the scenery and the background and the costumes, and it's in black and white, which is in some ways you have to be a little bit more skilled because you have to think about the contrasts and how it's going to show up on the screen. It was beautiful, just beautiful to watch.
Well, it makes me wonder how they got the nighttime shots too, because they, even in the movie itself, the film director is like, oh, I can't wait for the daytime to get some good shots, because you know, they didn't really have a lot of lighting back then, I guess. Like,
I think
at least for
they,
outdoor, they probably had light. Like,
right. Well, it may
probably
have been
a big
set.
Studio, yeah.
And it may have been a set, you know, where they, you know, where they were able to simulate the lighting that they needed.
Yeah. I mean, looking at it now, I guess I just, because I had never really seen it before, I just assumed it would be like too cheesy, like like, oh, that's dumb and dumb. But I was impressed with it. I liked it.
And it's and really an interesting
really,
story.
I think with now I can appreciate like how good it was for them back then. Also, I like the version that we watched. We rented it off, I think, Google or something, but it had what was it called? The music that they were playing at the beginning.
Oh, the overture.
The overture. Yeah. They played the overture at the beginning, which I guess they would play in the theaters back in the day.
I think so. Yeah.
To just kind of get everybody in the mood.
Yeah.
Really like great soundtrack, like you know, like the
really
was
iconic.
The Jurassic Park of 1933.
It really
had dinosaurs in it,
like. Oh and I thought it was really cool because the gate for the movie Jurassic Park, the original one, was clearly modeled after the gate on King Kong's Island.
Definitely.
Which was really cool. It was like, wow, they took that straight from the original King Kong, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
so let's contrast that with Kong Skull Island, which we just saw. What did you think of that, baby?
I liked it. I thought it was a great summer blockbuster action film. I could definitely tell it was made by the same team that did the more recent Godzilla movie,
which I haven't seen, so I'm gonna have to go back and watch that one.
So it was really like I really liked the new Godzilla because they actually made him look like the traditional Godzilla. Like,
now I love the original.
He was
Godzilla's.
A little he. People complained because they were saying, well, I don't know if they complained, but like he was a little bit fatter than the old Godzilla. They made jokes about him putting on weight, but I liked him. He was big. He was like smashing buildings and stuff. Because when they did the first American remake of Godzilla back in the 90s with Matthew Broderick,
I heard that
and
was
he
terrible.
He was terrible. Well,
I didn't see it,
well, he was
I
like
it was
Godzilla, and that was like the size of King Kong. He was only like. like maybe like 10 stories high, oh, or, you know, okay. like enough to like pick somebody up, but right. like not enough
like
to
smash a city.
Now in Kong Skull Island, they seem to have made King Kong
much bigger.
And I think that might be because they might do it like a Godzilla versus King Kong in the future.
Okay. That'd be cool.
But, I liked it. It was a completely different story, but it was pretty much the same King Kong, from the original, like very much the same kind of idea, except in this one, King Kong is protecting the islanders from the bone. What do
you call them? The skeleton monsters? Skull crawlers.
Yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. He was like, well, it sounds kind of dumb. Like in the movie when he's like, yeah, well, it sounds kind of dumb what I say. I haven't said it out loud before. You can call him something else if you want.
Yeah,
that was like the funniest part of the movie, and I was really sad that was in the trailer, because that was like a really
I don't think I saw a lot of the trailers for it because yeah, I didn't remember that.
You know, we can talk about that in a minute, but
yeah. So this version of King Kong, like they come to the island. It's kind of like they're claiming it's a survey mission, but it's not really. They're looking for Kong.
And the island in this movie is spoilers, by the way. All of our podcasts, when we talk about movies, there's going to be spoilers. Yes. So spoilers. So in this one, it's the end of the Vietnam War. We're mm-hmm. pulling out, and they want to go to the survey mission to this island, and it's like surrounded by a constant storm.
Yeah,
I guess
like a storm.
So they said the only way they can get in is with helicopters.
Yeah.
So they go in, and then they set off these bombs, I guess, to map the underground.
So they say they're setting off the bombs to map geological survey.
So they set off the bombs, and Kong attacks them.
Right.
And then the military guy played by Sam Jackson.
Uh huh.
I didn't like his character all that much. I guess they were going for like a real Ahab kind of character, because he goes on this like ridiculous mission to try and kill Kong.
Right.
Even when everyone else is like, no, we shouldn't kill Kong because he's the only thing protecting us from these bigger monsters.
Right, exactly.
You know, but overall, I really liked it. It was fun. There's some inconsistencies, like when they're taken off from all the helicopters are taking off of the ship. And stuff like this really bothers me, but when you see the shot of the ship, there's six helicopters, I think, total. There's like five and then one big helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
They all take off, and then the scene, they're flying into the weather storm, and there's all of a sudden, there's like twice as many helicopters as there was.
Yeah.
I counted, there's like 12 helicopters.
Yeah.
But there was only five on there was only six on the ship. I was like, where did all these, did they multiply?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I saw it, but it definitely looked to me, because I remember counting the helicopters on the ship, and then all of a sudden there's more. And there was a few other inconsistencies like that. But overall, it was a real fun action, kind of like turn your brain off and enjoy giant monsters fighting each other.
Yeah, now it was okay. Now for me, I am the kind of person, I don't like to see animals get hurt at all, even if they're like monster-ish animals. So for me, I actually kind of felt like, oh, I kind of don't like some of this, because I felt like, I don't care if it's a skull crawler or whatever they call it. Like, I don't like to see it get killed.
Yeah.
And I didn't like to see King Kong get hurt. And so, I don't know. For me, I felt like that made it a little harder for me to engage with it and enjoy it.
He kills a giant squid
and then he eats it. And I'm like, no, poor squid, no.
I was like, oh, yeah, King Kong's like, sushi.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. But it's like, yeah, for me, I felt like that made it a little harder for me to connect to the movie.
Never
really
watch any
it.
Nature documentaries,
I don't.
Hon.
Honey, I don't. The only ones we go see are like those Disney ones where nobody gets killed, like the monkey ones.
Yeah, those are usually pretty tame.
Yeah.
I love those, though. They come out like every year.
They're really nice.
What do they do before the monkeys?
I don't remember, babe. But anyway,
they do it for Earth Day every year.
Yeah, but I mean, that's my point. For me, that's why I had some trouble enjoying it. Now, I will say I really liked seeing Brie Larson, because she's been picked to play Captain Marvel in the standalone Captain Marvel movie.
Oh, yeah, the cast in this movie was amazing.
I got the sense that Brie Larson is going to make an amazing Captain Marvel. She was tough, but she could be vulnerable. She, like, could hold her own, but I could see... Now, Captain Marvel, in the comics at least, is a very complicated character with many flaws, and I could see that Brie Larson, I think, is going to do a really good job. Now, I hope the writing for the Captain Marvel movie is good enough that she can really shine, But I felt very confident after seeing this movie about the casting of Brie Larson.
I liked her. I think like this movie, they really put a good cast in. Like Tom Hiddleston was one of the main characters. You had,
and that was funny because you all know he's Loki. Yeah, so if Loki and Captain Marvel ever have some scenes together in future movies, that's funny.
And
John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, John Goodman.
John Goodman.
I love John Goodman. He's looking pretty healthy too. It looks like he lost a little bit of weight.
I really like John C. Reilly. I thought his character
John C. Reilly is hilarious.
Was one of the funniest because he's clearly the comic relief. He's been marooned on the island for about 30 years. He's been living with the islanders, but he was a World War II pilot. So he's very funny.
He landed on the island with a Japanese pilot, and they were fighting in the beginning of the movie, and then Godzilla kind of breaks them up. King Kong. Oh, that reminds me. By the way, thank you to my brother Steve. He pointed out last week we were talking about
the Star Wars movie.
He was in Rogue One, not Force Awakens.
We were talking about the right movie. We just put the wrong title. Yeah. We just said the wrong title of the movie. But anyway, that was Rogue One last week.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Latest Star Wars movie. But anyway, King Kong separates the Japanese fighter and the American fighter.
They're fighting, and he kind of you see his hand come down, and they're both. And they both kind of stop. And then later they become like best friends and they're like trying to build this boat to get off the island and stuff.
It was really good.
It was not perfect, but it was definitely worth checking out. And we didn't see it in 3D because I hate 3D.
Oh, I do too.
And I don't really see the point of it even in movies like that. I feel like the last movie that I went to go see in 3D that I was like, oh, that was kind of cool in 3D was probably Avatar. And that's the only one.
Oh, I think I saw Avatar in 3D as well. I think that's the first 3D movie I ever saw.
Only reason for that is like James Cameron spent all that money to make those special cameras to shoot it all in 3D and make it specifically for 3D. So like that one, I was kind of like, I understand. But these days, I feel like it's just, let's get a couple extra bucks out of tickets from people. Because once I put the glasses on and I'm watching, like, I forget I'm watching a 3D movie. Like, I can't remember which movies I watched in 3D. And it's always been because it was playing at a time that I wanted instead of, like, Like, I didn't want to wait an extra hour to watch the regular one.
Right. Well, that's how I feel, too. I feel like with 3D, if you're not going to do anything special for the 3D, like if you're just completely playing the same movie, but you just made it 3D, then what's the point?
Well, they get a couple extra dollars.
Well, exactly.
I understand that.
That's feel like if there's no artistic point, then come on. Come on.
Yeah. And
I saw 3D, better 3D at Universal Studios and Disney
3D
World
at this point
than
is
I've
so,
seen in the movie theaters.
It's so overdone, and I don't think anybody prefers it. Like, just stop doing it, Holly. And also, I wanted to talk about, we saw a trailer before Kong for Life, the new sci-fi movie coming out with Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal.
That outer space movie?
Yeah, and like we got done watching it. And I was like, well, I've just seen the entire movie. I swear, it's got to have every single plot point because, like,
it does. I'm assuming it does.
From the trailer, we know that they're part of this recovery. They're recovering the satellite that came back from Mars,
right?
And there's some sort of life on it, and it grows, and then
they show us everybody who it kills.
In the trailer, they have exposition that explains that this being wiped out all life on Mars years ago.
Yep.
And then you see the space station that they're on kind of blow up, and they're like, ew, if it gets to Earth, if we reenter the Earth's atmosphere, we won't survive, but it will. It's like, how much of this movie do you need to put in this trailer? It makes me want to not see trailers anymore, but it's like, can you avoid them? They put 20 of them in front of every movie you go see.
I know. And that I'm is like, disappointing.
So many movies recently have been ruined for me by trailers. Or if not ruined, at least like made the experience much less because I knew more than I needed to know going into the movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's like I really don't want to see Life now because...
Oh, I'm not going to. It's like we've seen the whole movie. We know who dies. We know when they die. We know what they have to do. I mean, we're pretty much sure they're going to blow themselves up in order to not contaminate Earth. I mean, it's like, why would we go see the movie now?
I just want to... Who's making these trailers? Like
I don't know.
Who's like, hey, we need a trailer for this movie. Could you just, like, you know, cut out all the unnecessary parts and so the movie is 2 minutes long? Yeah. And then it's like...
Now, I was saying to Matt, I liked, for instance, I thought the trailer for Suicide Squad was amazing. Not the movie, but I thought the trailer, because the trailer didn't give too much away. I liked how they played the song You Don't Know Me throughout the whole thing, and then they just had like different shots lining up, kind of like introducing the characters.
We didn't know the whole movie was going to be cut by the same people.
Well,
because they had a trailer house to cut the movie, right?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like the movie, the trailer was made by different people than who did the movie, right?
Was it?
I don't know.
All I'm saying
is that the trailer for Suicide Squad was the way a trailer should be.
Yeah, it was good because it didn't give major plot points. We didn't know who the villain was.
It made you want to see the movie, and it didn't give things away. And that's what I'm saying is what's good about that.
I've seen a lot of old trailers. Like, you watch the original trailer for Star Wars. Like, they don't give anything away. It's just like little scenes. Then there's usually like a narrator like explaining why you should go see this movie.
Right.
And I wish they would get back to that and just stop.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need a summary of everything that happens in the movie. Because in the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer spoils a lot, too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, there's characters in there that, like, they hadn't really...
Introduced.
And they're like, oh, well, there it is, you know? Right.
But let's get off the topic of trailers. I can see that's a sore spot.
Yeah, I wanted to. I could see that. I just wanted to mention that because that always annoys me every time I go to movies and see trailers.
I know.
Some groups are good about it and some are really bad.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but let's move on to something more fun.
Okay. So I saw Get Out this week too.
Now, Get Out is a horror movie. I do not go see horror movies unless they have to do with zombies. So I'm going to ask Matt some questions about it. I can enjoy the experience without being horrified.
So if you haven't seen the movie, it's the first horror film by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele.
Mm-hmm.
And he is really good. It's kind of like
Well, let's ask some questions about it. First of all, are there zombies in it?
No.
Are there demons in it?
No, there's no demons.
Are there gory, bloody murders in it?
Yes.
Okay, let's get into that. Who commits the gory, bloody murders? What type of villain is it?
Well, it's basically the main character who's the victim of this family ends up killing all of them for the most part.
Oh, so the family is the villains, but the main character gets
revenge. The family is the villains, one thing about the movie, like, it was so good. As typically, like, most horror movies, I feel like, are just kind of like been done to death, and it's like it's
predictable. I would say
most stuff is predictable. This I did not see what was going on coming, and like I kind of had an idea from all the trailers I had seen, but I really had no idea. So the whole thing is this family entraps black people and basically transplants people, the highest bidder's brain, into their body.
Oh my god!
To like give them. Like another lease on life or something. Like,
okay, that is definitely creepy.
Yeah, so that's
very
like,
creepy.
That is the biggest reveal in the movie, and it's done a really genius way. Like,
so it's like, more like psychological horror in a way, kind of like Twilight Zone.
It is very, very, very Twilight Zone esque, and it's like it turns out that like this guy's girlfriend is in on it and has like been entrapping all these guys. And you find that out at kind of like the big reveal of the movie. And it's like, it kind of plays on that. Like, I think a lot of people, like a lot of guys, at least I think, have this fear of like, your girlfriend isn't who she says she is kind of thing. like she's not, you know, like she doesn't really love you. Like I've
not
I,
like
I feel
women
like it,
ever feel the same way about men.
I feel like it plays on like a lot of really real fears that people have in real life. And it was
it
was done so well. And it was like the whole movie is just.
And do you think some of it was a societal allegory?
A little.
With like the black and the white things going on? Do you think some of that intended to be a little bit of a commentary or no?
I don't think it's like an allegory so much as like it's. You get the sense it's Jordan Peele writing about he's taking stuff that he's probably really afraid of in real life.
Uh-huh.
Kind of twisting that and turning it into like...
like his worst nightmare.
It's not like racism, but it's like... exactly. It's like they're evil in another way that's even worse.
Right.
You know?
And so it's kind of like he's twisting things into like his worst nightmare, maybe.
Well... yeah, it's somebody's worst nightmare.
Somebody's worst nightmare, right.
Like, he plays on a lot of different, like, themes, and it's just so good. Like, it's just well put together. It's well thought out. It's, like, one of those movies that you go home and you're, like, thinking about, like, that is creepy.
Now, let's ask some questions. When they transplant the brains, do you ever see the brains get transplanted?
So he's getting, before he manages to escape.
Like, do you see anybody else?
He's getting ready. He cuts the guy's head off, and you see him take the thing and like kind of throws the thing away. Uh-huh. And then that's about where he breaks out and escapes. And his friend works for the TSA, and it's really funny because his friend like suspects everything that's going on the whole time.
Uh-huh.
And he goes to the cops and he's like explaining, he's like, they're going to make him a sex slave or something like,
ew.
And because that was like his theory about what was going on.
Uh-huh.
And so he's like telling this detective this, he's like, hold on one second. And then they bring in more people. And he's like, tell them what you told me. And he explains the whole thing again, and they all just start laughing at him.
Uh-huh.
But then at the end he shows up. Right when his like girlfriend's about to kill him or something, or like, and you think it's the cops, but it's his friend in the TSA car cruiser, and he's like how did you find me. He's like, I'm the TSA, we got this on lock. Like, it was really good. The whole thing was just great. It was probably the best horror movie I've seen in a really long time. And most horror films I see, I'm just like, nah, boring.
Yeah.
Because, like, most slasher flicks are all the same. Like, you're just waiting for people to die. Like, different variations of Jason or Michael Myers. And it's good to see actual psychological thrillers that don't involve ghosts or serial killers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But something that actually makes you think. And that's what's so great about this movie.
That's good.
If you like horror movies...
which I don't. Yeah, but some of you do.
I'm sure you've probably already seen this, but this is definitely, and I'm excited for what Jordan Peele is going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those creators that's like, he's never done anything bad, and it's just like he keeps branching out and trying new things, and I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I think it would be cool if he did more horror movies. I think it'd be great if he did something else too, like a serious, like a drama or something.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he sticks to like comedy and horror, because I feel like those are a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at all those things. And I remember watching, like, if you watch a lot of Key and Peele skits, a lot of them had these like weird twists at the end.
Okay.
That aren't necessarily part of the joke really, but they're just kind of like an accent at the end of the, like there, I remember one with Jordan Peele specifically, where he checks in this hotel and they're like, oh, free continental breakfast. And he's like, oh, continental breakfast is free. And then it goes on. It's all about how like he's making a big deal about it being a continental breakfast. And then he goes to check out or something. It's like, they're like, sir, you've been here forever or something like that. And then it shows like a picture of him that's like old, that shows he's always been there. Like these kind of like creepy twists at the end of his sketches.
Okay. All right. So he's kind
of... I didn't explain that very well.
That's okay. He lost me a little bit. But, yeah.
But it's like kind of like he would kind of throw these kind of like almost...
kind of like creepy twists.
Like Twilight Zone kind of twists at the end of it.
Okay.
Like the initial premise of the skit would be funny. But then there would come this like twist at the end that was just kind of like a bonus, I thought. And I think that's kind of what he's exploring more with this movie too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's it's such a great movie. It's definitely...
well, that's cool.
I was gonna say, I only really went to go see it because everyone had told me how good it was.
Oh, okay.
Because I just don't get excited for many horror movies these days.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the new Netflix series that dropped, Iron Fist.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about this more next time too, because
we're only halfway through it.
How many episodes are there? Is there 12?
13? I don't know. There usually are 12 or 13.
So we're like on episode 6.
Yeah, so we're about halfway through. So Iron Fist, yeah, we started watching it this weekend. I like it. I can see why some people were saying it wasn't good. I don't think it's not good, but I think it's definitely lower key and slower paced than all of the other Marvel Netflix
series. I mean, what are we comparing it to?
We're comparing it to Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Daredevil.
Yeah, I think Luke Cage was a little bit better, but I don't think...
Oh, Luke Cage was amazing.
I don't think this is in any way bad.
I don't think it's bad either. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's
bad
either at all.
I'm enjoying it much more then I did enjoy the last half of the of Daredevil season two.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the last half of Daredevil season two just kind of turned into, like, we're going to fight some ninjas over here, and then we're going to go over here, and we're going to fight more ninjas, and it just kind of droned on for a while.
Yeah, like I mean, I'm really liking Iron Fist. That's what I'm saying. I'm really liking it, but I think when people are saying that it's not good or whatever, I think they're comparing it to Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil, which were very different. They were very intense. They were very fast-paced.
Yeah, this is kind of more like
very dramatic. And this is like, yeah, it's a slower paced story, and it's more about like interpersonal relationships, I would say.
And it was kind of like an origin story about how he came back to America too. It's not so much about how he became the Iron Fist.
No.
It's kind of like how he was introduced to the world.
Yeah, yeah. It's about him finding his bearings after coming back from Kunlan and being in New York. So it's, I like it. I'm really enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it too.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm not sure exactly.
Night Nurse finally showed up in the last episode. We knew she was going to be in it. So Night Nurse showed up in the last
episode. I was just trying to figure out. I was like, so, because he's like, he's like, I never lose. I'm like, well, if he never loses and never gets hurt, who's she going to fix? And then like some random guy gets shot or stabbed.
Stabbed.
And she's got to, it's like, oh, okay. Because that's what she does. She,
exactly.
She fixes people.
Uh-huh. I think it's interesting too how Night Nurse is really transitioning into her role. I forget her name. What's her character's name?
Claire,
you're right. So Claire is finally like starting to transition into Night Nurse, because at this point in the Netflix Marvel series, she's lost her job at the hospital. She keeps encountering superheroes to the point where they make a joke about it in like every new series. Like, oh, how do I keep meeting these people? Like, because you're Night Nurse. This is your destiny.
I think it's called like hanging a lamppost on it or something like that.
Oh, okay. I don't know
it's
that
like,
phrase.
It's like a term in writing where like,
oh, okay.
If something is a little weird, if you mention it in the script, then
it's like you're acknowledging
okay.
the weirdness.
Like
of
in
it.
Stargate where, when I was first introduced to this term, one of the things was, they like beam Jack up right I think it was in the episode where they were they had the TV show, like the Stargate TV show.
Okay, yeah.
And he was explaining that principle, like if you if something seems a little bit too convenient or too obvious, if you have your characters mention it, it suddenly becomes acceptable to
like
them.
They acknowledge that it's too obvious. They acknowledge that it's too convenient.
And it was funny because in Stargate, oftentimes like Jack would get beamed up by one of the Asgards, and he was like, "That was really convenient timing."
Yeah, because I understand that concept, because then it's like you're bringing the audience in on the joke. It's kind of like a wink to the audience. Like, we know what we're doing.
These days we call it meta, but.
Oh, okay, meta. Yeah, so whatever. But anyway, yes. So Night Nurse has made her reappearance. And I thought it was cute because, you know, at the end of Luke Cage, she and Luke are dating. And there's one point in this episode where she goes, "Sweet Christmas," which, you know, is Luke's catchphrase. And I was like, she's been hanging out with
her. I hope they bring in Daredevil or.
I don't
Luke
know if they will until point. They get to the Defenders series.
I feel like I'm not sure if they will. I feel like it'd be, I mean, because he's in New York, like he's dealing with all these people, like you'd think they would interact with each other.
But that's what the series The Defenders is going to be.
Yeah, but I mean, like you're setting it up, like Punisher was in Daredevil, so.
Yeah, but he was part of the storyline in Daredevil.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's not a defender either.
I just want to see more Daredevil
and
Luke Cage.
I know, but we will. We'll see it in Defenders. Yeah, I want to see more Jessica Jones. What do you
think of Iron Fist as a character?
I feel kind of meh about him as a character.
Yeah, I understand that. He's not real catchy.
He's just a little bit too blasé, I feel like. Like, even, like, his fighting is a little bit too blasé. And then I feel like they haven't quite delved enough into who he is as a character, his internal conflicts. Because on one hand, he keeps saying, well, I'm the sworn enemy of the Hand. I'm the defender of Kunlan.
Yeah, but then he's never actually met any of the Hand.
No, and then he's... And then he's challenged by the chairwoman. She said, "Why did you leave Kunlan? Why would an Iron Fist leave?" And he says in one of the fight scenes, "I'm only here for me. I only serve myself."
Yeah.
But then he's interacting like psychologically with his master, and so it's just like, well, explain that more.
I think they may get to that in the coming episodes.
I think so too. I think they will, but I think it's kind of building slowly, and I think maybe a little too
slowly. I think one problem I think. they may run into mm-hmm. with like, he's kind of, it's almost got this vibe of like Superman where like he can't be defeated.
That's interesting.
Because I feel like he's never come across like he's the ultimate martial artist, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's like, is he really gonna, he's like, even says it at one point. He's like, I must eliminate failure from my mm-hmm. mind or something like mm-hmm. that. It's like, never lose. It's like, well, if you're like that much of a badass, like mm-hmm. it gets a little boring after a while.
And I wonder, you know, maybe that's why they're focusing more on the interpersonal storylines, like with him and his two friends, Joy and Ward, and like him and the other martial artist. What's her name? I can't even remember her name. The sensei.
I don't remember her name.
The sensei
name
at the dojo. And I wonder if maybe that's why they're focusing more on the interpersonal stuff, because otherwise there's not going to be much of a story.
I think that's just what I think that's what they do with these series is they focus on, because like Luke Cage focused a lot on that club owner and his sister.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think it's bad to focus on interpersonal yeah. things, but I feel like the other three series focused a lot more on fighting, and I feel like we've hardly seen, there was a lot of violence.
You remember like the first series of Daredevil, like he didn't do a whole lot of fighting in the first half of the season.
No, did he not? Okay, like, maybe I'm not remembering.
I don't think
that the
first fight scene came to like the third or fourth episode.
Okay, so maybe it is on pace with that, and I'm just not remembering it because I'm remembering
I think it's pretty. I think it's pretty good. I want to give it more of a chance.
I definitely like it, and it's enjoyable to watch.
I think a lot of people may not like it because I've been seeing some people have been giving it bad reviews, but I think mm-hmm. they're just not familiar with the Iron Fist character, and I think they're kind of like not sure if they like him as a character or not. Mm-hmm. I've read almost no comic books with Iron Fist.
I haven't either. Really, so I don't really know.
I know he was a defender. I read a lot of Avengers and Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him around, but I've never actually read a story that involved him.
Okay.
I couldn't even comment on like how accurate he is.
I can't either.
He probably is pretty accurate, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, just because they've been pretty accurate with the other ones, I would guess he is. So I'm interested to see where it goes. Like, I definitely like it. I like watching it, and I'm kind of curious to see what happens with it.
I hope it does well, because I definitely want to see a lot more of these. I'd like to see more connections between all the different cinematic, because I know they're supposed to be in the same world as like all the movies and stuff.
Yeah, because sometimes they make references, like even in this one when they had that crisis management guy come into the company.
Yeah, talking about the
he
big
talked
green
about the
guy.
Incident. Well, and he talked about the incident. He's like, we've seen a lot more people like this since the incident. Or maybe Hogarth said that, the lawyer. I can't remember if it was the lawyer or the crisis manager, but they reference like the Marvel incidents and things like that. I'm hopeful. And I think definitely once by the time the Defenders series gets out there, we might see a lot more interaction.
Yeah, the Defenders series will probably be the best one, because then you'll have all the characters together that everybody mm-hmm. loves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people need more time with Iron Fist before we decide if we really... Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a good series. I've enjoyed it so far.
I mean, I definitely enjoyed it so far. I really like watching it. I'm curious to see what happens with it.
Yep.
With the second half of the story, because now we're kind of at the halfway point of the season. So.
Yeah, that's true. So it could completely
change. Because
he
just had his first battle with Chairman... Is it Mao? Chairman Mao? Chairwoman Mao?
No, not the Chairman Mao.
Chairwoman? What's her name?
I don't think it's Mao. I think it's something else.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Well, I forget what she said.
I'm not exactly sure who she's supposed to be.
I think she's supposed to be the Hand. Because did you see how she...
Well, she talked about her master, so it's like...
But I think she was lying. I think that's her. Because I seem to remember in another series, and I think it was the second Daredevil series, where she put her cane down and she fought Daredevil. And she was the one who was actually the Hand and the master behind everything.
I don't know.
I think she's lying about
some things in the Daredevil thing made me think she was like an alien or something. Because people were afraid of her like she was like...
Well, that's what I think. I think she's the Hand. I think she has something to do with this Kunlan and how she escapes somehow with like her evil power.
Well, yeah, because he said that Kunlan was in another dimension.
Exactly. And she must have to do with the zombies as well, because all the zombies, like when they were reviving Elektra and all that, had to do with the Hand.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think she's kind of like, maybe allegorically speaking.
That's why I'm thinking Daredevil will probably show up, because Daredevil was fighting the Hand a lot. And
exactly.
That's what Stickhole thing was fighting the Hand too, wasn't he?
I think so.
So.
Yeah, and definitely the Night Nurse was. So, well, yeah, she was with Daredevil, I guess, in that series. So, Claire. I should call her Claire, but it just Night Nurse comes out so much faster because she's always doing the nursing.
Right.
Yeah. But Yeah, but I'm enjoying the series so far. And I think you're right. I think they're going to start to pull together a lot of the storylines. I kind of am getting the sense that Defenders is when they're going to resolve all of the storylines with the Hand. Because it's like they're pulling in different threads from each of the characters. And then I think when all the characters get together, that's when they're really going to resolve the whole issue that they've been building up so far.
Yeah.
So...
Somebody sent a text message to our Google Voice for the Nerdy Rat.
Oh, really? I
have a feeling it's just the wrong number, though.
Yeah. But,
if you guys have any questions for us here at the Nerdy Rat, feel free to send us an email at thenerdyrat@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Be sure to check out our website, thenerdyrat.com. All of the show notes will be on there, including all the links to the stuff we talked about.
Yep. Like the bald eagles, you can see the photos, the videos.
Patrick Stewart on Conan O'Brien talking about being a foster is really great.
And the video of him kissing his dog is so sweet.
Follow him on Instagram. Yes. He posts so much stuff.
And if you feel so inclined, you can make a donation to one of our charities. We have Small Angels Rescue, which rescues the rats, guinea pigs, hamsters, gerbils, mice, and they're a 501c3 nonprofit. And we also have a link to Extra Life, which Matt raises funds for through his video gaming streaming, and that benefits Children's Miracle Networks. And his charity is the Children's Hospital in DC, and all of that money raised goes directly to patient funds for patients who can't afford care.
Yep. So. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.